Welcome to the Roy Harper Podcast. This is episode number 14 for September 2008. In this show, some news and the third part of the interview with Roy Harper. This time round, there's 70 minutes of interview, so there's actually not very much room for anything else. So this is going to be mainly interview. Feedback from all three parts of the interview and the next A to Z of Harper will be next month in October. A little bit of news first. I got an email from Tracy Harper letting me know about a very interesting project which has got a webpage on MySpace. If you go to www.myspace.com/allyouneediswhatyouhave, and I'll put that URL in the show notes, there's a page dedicated to a Roy Harper tribute album, and I'll read you out the quick bio on that page. All You Need Is What You Have is a tribute to the genius songcrafting and unwavering, uncompromising individualism of Roy Harper, curated by Laurel Canyon folk troubadour and longtime Harper fan Jonathan Wilson. This collection features Roy admirers such as Chris Robinson from the Black Crowes, Gary Lewis from the Jayhawks, Scottish Virginian folk rocker Jonathan Rice, Eric Johnson, the Fruit Bats and the Shins, indie songwriting wunderkind Benji Hughes, and more. The collection is not finished as of yet. Wilson is waiting on several artists to turn in their tracks, and he's also approaching artists now to round out the tribute and release with a like-minded label in 09. Now, you can go to MySpace and actually listen to four of the tracks, and I've got to tell you, they're really worth a listen. And if this project comes to fruition, then it will be something that any Harper fan will want in their collection. Obviously, I'm contacting these guys and seeing if they're interested in having a chat with us on the podcast. Time will tell. But yeah, it's well worth a look. Okay, well, in the background is playing Che from Roy's Valentine album, another really nice guitar piece. Once that's finished, we'll go into the interview, and at the end of that, I'll give you a quick rundown on what's going to probably be in next month's podcast. Okay, here's a really open-ended question for you then. What are you proud of having done or proud of having achieved?
Oh, jeez. Well, that, I guess, is that's fluid as well. I'm very proud of things that occur on moments that are unrepeatable. You know, I was... And not particularly for me. I mean, the other day, this sounds mad, absolutely bloody crazy, but I was proud for the Germans that they got to the final and that they were able to stand there with their anthem, which has been mutilated, turned around, changed, and, you know, and that they didn't actually stand there and sing Deutschland über alles.
Yes.
You know, but they were... And you knew they were going to lose. But there was their anthem, and that's their proud anthem. And, you know, it's a moment in the history of Die Folk. you know, the Welsh national anthem is the same thing.
Yeah.
I get a big power from listening to, you know, what used to happen at Cardiff Arms Park. When those boys, you know, like J.P.R. Williams and Bennett and Scrumhalf, what's his name? I'll kick myself for this one. He's got a statue up in a really tacky mall in Cardiff, and you know, but the Welsh national anthem is. Absolutely brilliant. It's a brilliant piece of, you know, inspiring music sung by, you know, 50,000 in Cardiff Arms Park. And you know, another one is perhaps the, another. You know, there's a few of them. There's a few of them. One or two that you can actually. Marseillaise is good.
Yes.
And Marseillaise is great. You know. But then you come down to the other ones. The Spanish, it's really weird. And you understand that the other anthem that was sung the other day, you know, that the anthem of the winning team, no words. And it's not had any words. Mm. And it has had words, but, they were Franco words.
Mm.
There was some before that, but, you know, it's always been had the wrong words. And, of course, they can't have the words because they're Spanish Catalans.
Mm-hmm.
Basques and Galicia, you know, the Galicians as well. There's like four different peoples in there trying to actually fight for their independence. So, you know, the dilemma in watching that was like, these guys can't have a national anthem, but they can start to play like a national team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can play like a national team for the first time because actually they've experienced the world now outside of Spain. And the world outside of Spain is huge, and it's awe-inspiring, it's overbearing. And they're going to be inundated, like all of us in Europe are, by the Chinese industrial movement.
Mm.
And so the world is, we are now more like Europeans than we ever were. And I think the different elements in places like Spain can see themselves now as being more Spanish, perhaps. They'll still have their local rivals. They'll still have their little wars and their little bombings. But they're much more together and much more integral now than ever they were 10 years ago or 20 years ago. Or, you know, enough time to give them to actually give them a national anthem that actually brought them together. I mean, at one time or another, you know, in that team there would have been Basques and Catalonians in that team, Catalans in that team, who didn't want to play in the team, really. Mm. And they'd been selected, and, you know, and some of them wouldn't have played.
Mm.
But there you saw them on that field there, and they were proud of themselves, and they were proud of themselves as a nation, not as Spanish, or as Catalan, or as Basque, you know, not as that, but something new.
I see, yes.
Something entirely new. And I had that moment of pride where I felt this for them. I think those moments are really valuable.
Hmm.
Those moments are valuable for me because they tell me what's going on with people, how people see themselves, how they are, how they, you know, because a song will do it. The national song will do it. And I, you know, by the same token, the British national anthem is paltry. It's bloody awful. It's the worst song we've got.
Yeah.
You know, it may be, the music may be passable, but the words, God, I mean, you know, I'm not being anti-royal.
No, it's just...
I'm not an anti-royalist. I just think it's pathetic that you could have a sixth verse mm-hmm. in there that says, you know, come on, you Scots, let's be, you know, we'll keep you down. Or, you know, it's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous anthem. And it's 200 years out of date.
Well, yes, I mean...
It's 200 years out of date, and it should be. We should now be thinking about what a proper piece of music... which is going to unite us all ought to be.
Can you imagine how difficult it would be to get some kind of consensus about that?
Well, it is going to be difficult. You know, what do you do? Land of Hope and Glory, that's not going to work in Scotland, is it? you know, or you know, Jerusalem. God, no, you know, I mean, you know,
a lot of people would go for that, actually.
Well, you know, Blake was brilliant. Blake is one of my favourites. He's fantastic. Blake is fantastic, you know, and did those feat in ancient times. Walk upon England's mountains green, and you go there for... well, did they? What are you talking about?
Yeah, no. When you start to analyse it, you think, I'm not so sure, but...
You know. And he's fantastic, but, you know, we can't have that. We couldn't have that as a national anthem.
No.
But it will be something like that that everybody would settle on.
Yes.
I mean, if, you know, the worst thing to do is what the Spanish did and say, okay, we're going to have a contest now to see who can write the best words, you know.
Yeah.
And then what they did was to choose the most mundane, you know. And, of course, that's not going to work. That's not going to last.
No.
What you need is something that's quintessentially British. And that covers not only England, Scotland, Wales, it covers Ireland too. Because, you know, the Irish have got to be covered in some ways or another, because there are as many Irish in Britain as there are in Ireland. And the Irish diaspora is, you know, it's worldwide, like the British diaspora. So you've got to actually try to include everybody. Is that trying to include everybody? It is impossible. But those are sort of moments of pride that you have. But, you know, when it comes down to it, when I think achievement alone inspires me. You know, somebody's achievement. It can be anywhere. You can be, you know, watching Beckett, watching Waiting for Godot. And you can really, I mean, I can become tearful for the poet himself, for Beckett, just thinking about this, how simple that is as a construction to have two men doing that in a play. And yet, how wonderful it is. And the same will go for... you know, sporting achievement, where you get somebody who wins from out of the blue and stands on the podium to the anthem and floods.
Yes.
You know, and that's always you know, an inspiring moment. You know, people getting together is inspiring. So, I mean, what was your original question? What am I proud of most?
Well, no, you've taken an interesting approach on that, because you're saying you've been talking about being proud of or inspired by other things.
I'm proud of us being human.
That's a very laudable thing, I think.
I'm proud of us being human. That's what I'm trying to get to.
Yeah. And that
but
makes
I
sense.
Think we should take that seriously. You know, I think that we should actually, you know, think of the humans as the one animal on the planet who is capable of understanding the planet to some degree.
Well, one would like to think so, but, you know,
taking that into consideration,
we know that we're capable of so much more if only we can, like, get our act together. And yes, I feel inspired when I see people are getting their act together occasionally and doing these things with no agenda.
Well, that's right. And the only agenda is that you pass on hope, and
yes,
it's beneficial for others. And I see a lot of that in the, you know, in, as I was saying last night to you, I have no faith in government. Government's a dead duck. But when you you know, and it's something to be really depressed about, to be honest, because you can't see a future in government activity. Although you realise that it's probably got to be there, but actually thinking about local, what happens with local people, and I see a lot of it now, local people are motivated to do something for themselves And not only that, they're motivated to do things for other people. And there's a great joy in seeing people do things for other people in that way.
Mm, I agree with that.
And, you know, whether it's a tiny NGO that, you know, cares to offer something to the Africans by way of what they actually want rather than something coming from above, which is pilfered by the ruling class. You know, where somebody actually sets out, like you said yesterday, with a vehicle packed with goods with the intent on flying back and leaving the whole thing there. I mean, that's what needs to be done in some circumstances. In others, it's, you know, every different circumstance has a benefit by treating it as an individual circumstance. I mean, it's no good to just give people money. They'll just go and spend it on, you know, cigarettes or whatever.
Yeah.
You've just got to help them with their lives. You've actually got to identify with their lives and see what it is that they really need.
Right, rather than just chucking money.
Yeah, rather than throwing money at it. Because that's going to earn the most, you know, the best heart. The best heart in the world is to give from that place. Anyway, does that answer anything?
I think you made I think the point made there was a good one, and the,
yeah, I'm proud of us being
what
human.
We can do, yes, I think that's a really good answer.
Yeah, it's not one I'd thought of before today.
Well, good.
You got me into a corner there. But I'm, you know, on a personal basis, I'm proud of what I've done, you know, in the garden here.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's a,
and so you should be.
It's an ongoing experiment, and, you know, I've got about 20 of them going at once. So, you know, I'm proud of that.
But it's what we were saying before about having our own lives as well as looking at the big picture. You can be proud of having got up at the right time in the morning and feeling good.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be a big thing.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. You're completely right. Are we? Oh, no. Still got some blue sky coming.
Yeah,
no,
we do. Okay. Just back to the music for a minute, because I'm quite interested in knowing what you think about this. As you know, last year you played at the Albert Hall and you supported Joanna Newsom.
Brilliant.
And I went along to that without having heard any of her music before. And I had an absolutely magical evening.
Yeah, she's wonderful.
Absolutely.
She's absolutely wonderful.
What also was very clear was that she was filled with joy about having sat at the back of the Albert Hall watching your set when you played, you know, all of Stormcock. And she was really keen.
Yeah.
And happy.
She was lovely, yeah.
And I keep thinking about this whole kind of associations thing and the connections with Led Zeppelin and the connections with Pink Floyd, and we've been talking a bit on previous interviews about whether or not on the whole it's been a good thing, and a lot of people have made the point that it's introduced you to a lot of people that may not have got to know you. I mean, I think back when I was a teenager, I think it was the Zeppelin 3 thing that brought your name to my attention, shall we say, and then we started going out and finding the records and listening, and obviously that was a great, because that was a vehicle to get us there. But I mean, this is a silly question maybe, but do you ever feel do you ever wish that you'd also had your own private jet and been zooming around and had got into that league, or
well,
are you not
yes,
bothered?
Yes, but you know, I could only have had that on my own terms, and my own terms were very clearly laid out in the contract. Terms and conditions, Roy. I think it's a millstone in some ways.
Right. Yes.
All of those things are millstones, but actually, it's been great times as well because of them. And I know, you know, those guys are still friends to some degree. I mean, you know, definitely Jimmy and Robert and, you know, Pete.
Yeah, you went to the O2 thing, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, definitely that. And so, you know, I'm very grateful that those guys did that. I'm extremely grateful. I mean, I didn't... Oh, who's this? Somebody else has arrived. Oh, it's Tony to cut the grass. yeah, so... So, I'm extremely grateful that happened. But, of course, I didn't solicit it. And it might look as though I did at some point.
You know, no, I don't think you did. I've never got the impression that you did.
No, I'd run a million miles from that. What I would have done in those days... you tend to... These days, you tend to welcome little bits of added publicity like that.
Yeah.
All I was interested in the 70s was having a good time.
Quite so.
That was all I was interested in.
Mm.
I mean, I wish that hadn't have been quite like that.
Yeah.
But it was.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the good news is we're on the second page of questions, and there's less on the second page than the first page.
Ah.
And some of them are very quick.
No, you don't count your chickens before they're hatched.
All right, this is the sort of kind of crunch question for a lot of people that will be listening to this, because, you know, we have these forums and mailing lists and everything, and for the past year or 2 years or whatever, there's been people sort of turning up and saying, what's happening? Is there going to be any, you know, what's happening with the gigs? What's happening with the album? What's going on? And the last sort of release of new stuff, I suppose, was that really good DVD, Beyond the Door, which I think is brilliant.
Yeah, I think it's good too. It's underpublicised.
It's underpublicised. The video part of it is brilliant, and the audio CD as well. I rediscovered it a few months ago and played it down in my little musical room, and it was, you know, it really transported me back to the gigs, and it was, you know, fantastic. And we've had the re-release of Stormcock, which is...
Hold it there.
No, it's fine.
Hold it there. Tony! Tony!
And, of course, we had the re-release of Stormcock a few months ago, which sounds better than ever, and I really like that.
That's good. I'm pleased with those things that I've been doing recently.
Yeah. So the obvious question is, what can fans expect from you in the future? I mean, we know time marches on, ever on and on, and, you know, you're getting older. You've said you're not enjoying gigging so much, so I have to ask you the killer question. I mean, what happens next, if anything?
Well, I do have half a record written.
Good.
So there is going to be, you know... My intention is to carry on writing, but... I've kind of reached a watershed where, you know, I've realised a lot of things about what I don't want to do. You know, I don't want to be dragged around gigging anymore. It's so... At my stage in life and at the level that I gig, it's sometimes really uncomfortable.
Yes, yeah.
You can't always be assured of what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't be... You can't either be satisfied with a lot of the places that you play in. So something's got to be done about that. You know, beggars can't be choosers, of course. I've got to feel refreshed,
mm-hmm,
in order for anything like that to be attempted again. I'm really thinking about not gigging now.
On home turf.
Well, you see, there probably will be a final tour. I don't know how I dare say that. You know, I don't know how I can say that, but I'm saying it. There probably will be a final tour. But, you know, for a final tour, I mean, what kind of rubbish is that? You know, I did a final tour. You know, you're going to have, I'm going to work myself up again to doing all of the stuff that, you know, now how do I choose the material? Well, there's certain material that chooses itself. You know, and I've got a large canon to choose from.
Yes.
But there are going to be, you know, and there's things that are going to be left out that should be in. And maybe I should get, you know, a couple of hours worth together and sing different songs, have like two or three different gigs, but then that's a whole load of work.
Well, I remember when you used to do the Half Moon Putney three nights in a row type stuff.
Yeah.
Back when I used to work at university, and you'd play a different set every night, and it was a hell of a feat, and, you know, it must have taken enormous amounts of effort.
It did. It did. People don't realise. People just think of you as some kind of weird stoner.
You know. Yeah.
Yeah, folks!
Yeah.
You know, and I loved my dope. Of course I did, you know.
Yeah.
Before the days when it got to being, you know, too much skunk.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I have to thank dope for a lot of the... a lot of the input... you know, that I've managed. That's wrong in a way, because what I should say is a lot of the moods that I got to enable me to input in such a way, and you know, mind altering drugs do that.
Well, in a way, it's a case of letting your mind wander into bits areas you don't often let it do so,
yes.
And picking up stuff
it frees
and,
you up.
Yeah.
From the normality.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I don't do that very much anymore. I, you know, there's the occasional toke. The token toke. You know, but it's my life has moved into a different place now.
Sure.
It's moved into the open air. It's moved into knowing what's going on with that ash tree over there. You know, and all of the things that are going on around, like how annoying the damn magpies are.
Mm.
You know, how really they really need to be shot. But I've not actually taken that step yet. But they are killing all the, you know, they are killing the songbirds.
Mm.
So, you know, but I'm in a different phase of life. I'm considering different things altogether. The final tour, yes.
Well, just to concentrate on that for a sec, I mean, some people that I've spoken to said, well, why doesn't he do a kind of... targeted bombing is not the expression I wanted, but that's one that popped up in my head. Doing sort of major cities, doing a London gig, a, I don't know, Glasgow or Edinburgh gig or whatever, just doing like three or four. Maybe that would be the thing, because that would then pull in all the people that would go to the smaller provincial gigs and have a bigger
event.
Yeah, and
then you sort of, your carbon footprint becomes, you know,
right,
absolutely massive.
Which I suppose also has bearing on the whole Clonakilty.
Yeah, it does.
The Barris, because I remember you mentioned that last year.
Yeah, because that's massive. You know, when you're bringing people from hundreds of miles, it's kind of... It's not a joke anymore, but, you know, you can think of this as the last of the good times. You know, before we couldn't get on aeroplanes anymore.
There's a thought, yeah, you just don't know.
You don't know, do you?
Yeah.
You don't know. All you know at the moment is that it is going to be slightly harder.
Oh, yeah, you can see that
going forward.
The tide is turning and all those kind of other expressions. Yeah.
So I don't know, you know, I think I would love to do one. I would say I would love to do, in theory.
Yeah.
I would love to do London, Birmingham. Don't know about Birmingham. London, Birmingham, Manchester, Newcastle.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Edinburgh maybe, or Glasgow. And, you know... If I could just do those five and just then call it a day, I'd be, you know... But then I would think, that I would have to hold myself to that. And you know what farewell tours are? They're kind of sometimes the kickstart for a whole new career. You know.
Yeah, we've seen it happen.
And
yeah.
I don't want to do that. I just don't want to do it. And I'm poorer now than I was when I was on the road.
Yeah.
Obviously. It's, you know, it just doesn't, the cash doesn't come in the same. I've earned more selling houses than I have from music.
That's a bit of a sobering thought, isn't it?
Yeah. Now put that in your pipe and smoke that.
I don't think anybody has a right to expect any type of behaviour or output from you, but I think some people fall into the trap of thinking that way.
Of thinking which way?
That you have some kind of obligation to tour or obligation to record or whatever. And it's not,
you
it's
can't
not like
do
that.
It. You can't do it if... When you reach a certain age, you can't do it because you become... I hate to say this, and I won't say it.
Okay.
But, you know, and we can talk about whether we use this or not, but I've had a year of illness. And that particular illness, you know, prostate cancer as it was, has put my head in a different place altogether. And it didn't feel too good for a couple of months.
Mm.
It felt decidedly bloody awful. And I know what, you know, people who have cancer have to go through. And, you know, as one of the nurses said, this isn't going to be a walk in the park.
No, understatement of the year, perhaps.
Yeah. And it isn't. But, I don't know, reaching a certain age means that you are more likely to suffer because of the load that you put on yourself.
Yeah.
Now, you can control that. I'm good at putting loads on myself. I'm really good at that. I can load up. I can go down there now with a spade and really load up. Mm. You know, I'm still at it with a spade and a shovel and, you know, all of that. But what I've got after that is just the ability to come back to the house and rest for however long I need to rest to get rid of that that load that I've just, that burden that I've just borne. And I don't have that on the road.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. You're in that
you
situation
don't have that.
And it's kind of not controllable very easily,
you can't,
is it?
There's a point you reach where you can't control it anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, you see other people getting tired around you as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And their burden increases. You know, so I want to be positive about it, and because I want to be positive about everything. But I would say there is another tour in me, but I don't know when that's going to be. It'll obviously be after I've written, you know, after I've managed to pull myself out of the state I'm in at the moment, which is not a bad state. I'm not in a bad state at all.
Mm.
I'm healed, and... I'm reasonably fit.
Yes.
I'm as fit as anybody, as old as me.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about
that. Bar, you know, I'm in the top 5% of the people who are as old as me, but I still have to be watching myself.
If you want my personal opinion, I don't think the gigging is as important to me in any sense as getting the Roy perspective on what's going on. And if that is done through new music, great. If it's done with blog entries on the internet, great. If it's done in the terms of essays, great. I don't need to see you play live, but then again, I've seen quite a few. But I think people need to hear what you've got to say about stuff, and I think that's more important than dragging yourself around with a guitar if it can be done in a different way.
Yeah, I don't think that I'm one of the, you know, I don't think that I'm one of the more special minds around on the planet at the moment.
Well, you may not, but, you know, people are used to
a certain interpretation.
Exactly.
With a certain delivery behind it.
Mm.
And I'm, you know, I'm under no illusions at all about where I stand in terms of, you know, my intellectual capacity, which is substantial, but it's not, you know, I'm not in the perhaps Alan Greenspan bracket. But I don't think that's got much to do with it, as you say. And, you know, I don't have any false modesty either. I just think that I shouldn't be chasing things like that now.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't even be thinking about it. I should be thinking about living life. You know, look at this, sun.
I know. I mean, we're sat in a gorgeous location. Yeah. The sun's out, birds are singing.
This is life. It's,
yeah.
This is, you know, it's not a rehearsal. So I just, I think that I will carry on writing because, and I've been quite naughty actually at the moment. I've had a lot of things to do just recently. And they've involved things I don't even talk about on this tape. But there's been substantial things to do. But at the same time, I've been writing the last passage that I will ever write with regard to my thoughts on Stormcock. And it's a passage that's called, it's going to be called The Code in the Artwork. Because there is a code in the original artwork that people have overlooked over time. And it's not a question of It certainly isn't a question of rewriting history because it's there on the original sleeve.
Mm.
It's there in plain black and white, or actually pink and orange.
Mm.
So I've been doing that. And it's actually been an on and off thing for the last month. And I got to a place with it at one stage where I threw it all away. I thought, this is garbage. This isn't. And I took certain things out of it that were there,
mm-hmm.
and that were needed, necessary things. But I left the great, the vast majority of it where it was. I actually deleted it. So there was no chance of me going back to it. And I've started again.
Mm.
And I've found now that I've wandered too much. And I don't know whether that's going to be readable or not. And, you know, I know that I should probably write a book. That's one of the things that I should be doing. And it's not as though I should be writing a book about you know, biography or anything like that. I've got stories. I could write stories. You know, there are some really good stories that need to be told. But I think that that's my way forward. I think that writing is my way forward.
Mm.
And I've been naughty in so far at the moment that I haven't got it out. But part of my lethargy in that respect has been that, and this is an excuse, I've wanted to redesign the website for some time, and I need some help with it, to be perfectly honest. And I think that that will inspire me then to finish that bit that I'm working on, put Stormcock to bed forever, and come out it with a new...
You can often find that it is things like that that serve as the catalyst or the enabler for lots of other things that have been queued up waiting to come through.
That's the catalyst. That's going to be the catalyst.
Mm.
So, you know, sorting the website out is going to be the catalyst, because the website has been static for a while now, and it's not got to be, because it's now my major outlet
exactly
to the world
exactly. Yeah.
So it can't be, and it's been static for this while because I've been in, you know, various shades of trouble that I've been in this last year.
Sure.
And because I need that website redesign.
Mm.
And once that's done, I think I'll be off on another tack.
Mm.
And then I'll be able to complete, you know, the record. And I'll be able to start on another one. Because once you get your wind up...
Right. Yeah.
It's important not to let your momentum go.
Mm.
You know, once you let your momentum go, you've had it. So what I'm looking forward to now is getting some momentum together and not letting go, and perhaps taking me 3 records into the future, which is all that I can think about.
Mm.
I couldn't think about any more than that. I mean, I've got, you know, those... I've got sufficient plans. There's one finished in my head.
Yeah.
And there's a couple more that need to be done. And then there's a lot of work to be done on the internet, to be honest. Because there's another half to the Love Songs record, East of the Sun.
Oh, yeah.
There's the other right. half of that to do.
Mm.
Because nobody knows the intention I had with that.
Right.
And it's only half done. There's only half the songs on there. You know, I'm not going to tell you now what the other half is going to be, because that will then... Somebody else will do it. Somebody else will do it for me, and...
Yeah. No, it's good to have... some undisclosed surprises
yes.
in the pipeline anyway.
But that's, you know, that is a... And people are going to go, oh, no. But actually, when they see that that's done, they will recognise the first half for what it is.
Mm.
When they see the second half, they'll realise what the first half is.
Mm.
And then that will make that record much more valid. It'll make that... You know, that we're going to have to go through a bit of noise whilst he disappears round the front.
Okay.
That's my own fault, actually. I told him to come back.
No, that's fine.
It'll get quieter. It'll get loud when he gets to there, and loud when he gets to there, and it'll get quiet in between.
No, that's all right. One of the things I really wanted to talk to you about, talking about getting your ideas about things, is we're recording this at the start of July, and in the last few weeks we've had the ridiculous situation in Zimbabwe with a kind of pseudo-election. Do you think the West should intervene in that kind of thing? Should we leave people alone? Have we got any kind of responsibility? And have we not intervened so far just because there isn't oil there? What do you think?
Well, I think we're obliged to intervene, but we can't do it militarily. That'd be a terrible mistake.
Right.
And we can't do it. We can hardly do it diplomatically. Diplomatically either, the Brits, because we are seen as the past aggressor, you know, when it was
that's right,
Rhodesia.
We have a history of poking our nose in.
Yeah, well, no, it was Rhodesia.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was Northern Rhodesia and Southern Rhodesia, and, you know, and I remember I collected the stamps, you know. So I knew Rhodesia before that time, but I have to think that you know, ZANU-PF is it's not actually a long way away from what it was in the beginning, because Mugabe won that victory over the big guy, what was his name? Joshua Nkomo, wasn't it?
That's right.
And he was like that in those days. You know, he was very, very ruthless.
Yeah.
He was potential. You did see the potential dictator there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you kind of forgave it at the time, obviously, because it was, you know, black people doing for black people what they had to do.
Mm.
But, you know, it was kind of... it was a bit of a... Sorry, the other guy has just passed and I've got to still talk to
yep.
him.
Okay.
Yeah, he was... he looked like a dictator in the beginning, so you can't forget that.
Mm.
I mean, it wasn't all that glaringly obvious. It was just like, cool, this guy's been a bit rough.
Yeah.
You know. And then, you know, over subsequent years, you know, there's been the Ian Smith kerfuffle.
Yes.
And, you know, he's finally... left the planet, and the whole thing has gone into old world fights modern world.
Very much so.
And the modern African world wants to come to terms with itself on a different level than Mugabe ever did, and I think that it's beholden unto us to help those guys. I mean, seeing as it was a former colony, and, you know, you can think what you will about colonialization of places, but actually, you know, there are pros and cons, and there's, you know, thankfully the Commonwealth is now a functioning item on the planet. You know, built of comprising millions of human beings who would not necessarily be in a friendly organization, but mm-hmm. weren't it for the Commonwealth. What you can say against that is that there were so many former injustices in that Commonwealth that it's a wonder it does hold together.
Mm-hmm.
But that's also one of the reasons why it doesn't at times properly. So, you know, and the whites did take the piss, you know, a lot of the time. And a lot of the time unconsciously as well, you know. I mean, Cecil Rhodes said, you know, being born English is to win the lottery of life. You know, when you cringe when you mm-hmm. hear things like that, because it's so... you know, jingoistic in a way. Well, it's not so much jingoistic as pure nationalism, you know.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And, you know, egotistical nationalism too. When it comes to dealing with Mugabe, I think what's going to happen now is quiet diplomacy on behalf of Europe, because being white, we'll always seem to be white, and there's nothing that we can do about that. We can't. There's absolutely nothing we can do about it. They have an absolute right to what they're doing, because they have sovereignty in their own country. There is no question that intervention should be based on "we don't like what you're doing," because that's another form of the kind of prejudice and injustice that we've seen visited on Iraq. in recent times. So there's no way that we can actually go there and, you know, with guns and bombs and the gunships.
Mm.
There isn't a way that we can do that. I mean, it'd be nice, just on a personal level, if I could just go and put a bullet through, you know, Robert's
quite so
head.
Yeah.
If I could do that and spare humanity the rest of, you know, by giving my the rest of my life and my time to do that, I would do it. Because that would be I would think that that would suit mankind. I think I'd help a lot of people. You would help a lot of people by doing that. But that's out of order. You can't do things like that. You know, it's a long way, but we're a long way past time, you know, thinking about even means like that. Or at least ways we should be. We've got to be trying to set examples. And the best example that we can set is to do this as patiently as we can and as diplomatically as we can. And I think that we can use other nations in Europe, besides ourselves, to actually guide the cabal that is in, that runs Zimbabwe at the moment, into perhaps making better decisions than it is at the moment. I don't think the Brits, I think the Brits are completely handcuffed. I think we're tied.
Yeah.
I don't think we can move one inch without it coming straight back from Mugabe. I think I think Mugabe is one of these people who sits and waits for you to move, and then he's just going to react.
Mm.
You know, in the true sense of an old reactionary. So there's nothing that the moment someone moves a muscle in Britain, he's aware of it. So it's no good us doing anything like that. What we have to do is to get the rest of the world on side with the idea that he has to go. And then not take advantage. Not take advantage of anything.
I think what you said about setting an example is completely nailing it, because it is that.
Yeah.
It's not dragging yourself down to the level of the people that you're trying to, you know, that you wished were at your level, if you like. I don't know.
Civilization has to learn proper lessons. It has to have proper examples in front of it. It's no good waving swords anymore.
Mm.
It isn't. You can't do that. You cannot do that and hope for a future. There is no future in that. There's no future for humanity in that. Our future, the future of humanity, is obviously, to me, if we make it beyond this difficult stage that we're in at the moment, the future for humanity is obviously in space. And, you know, before we get anything like remotely into space, we've got to have sorted the problems out on Earth.
Mm.
Otherwise, they're just going to follow us into space. And we're going to have the real Martians arriving.
Oh, yeah.
You know. You know, the people who have colonized Mars eventually, who, you know, want to take over Earth for whatever reason.
And it would be the whole thing just played out on a much larger scale.
On a different scale altogether. And no matter where you take that in the universe, unless you've got it sorted in the first place, and because there are going to be opportunities to move beyond the solar system, that's obvious. You know, with all kinds of things like, proton drive stuff. You know, stuff that's beyond
the stuff of science fiction that he really often seems to actually end up coming.
Yes, well, you know, you invent your own future in any case, to a certain degree. I mean, I can't say that, you know, in those terms, God still doesn't exist for me and never will. And, you know, not to make a joke out of it, but religion does beggar belief. But anyway, I just think that those the whole diplomatic process, we have to have a stable planet. We absolutely have to have a stable planet before we can think about any future at all. And that would involve no real aggression.
Yeah.
Being apparent, you know. Obviously, we are going to evolve. The possibility of us evolving into a different animal is great if we get, if we, you know, surmount difficult periods. And you would hope that the tools that the more evolved animal will receive will be better tools to develop a mental capacity that doesn't involve aggression. You know, that actually has aggression sidelined. You know, it may be, obviously, in our travels through the universe, it may be obviously necessary to be aggressive on occasions. But I think that if that is the case, and thinking it, I'm thinking now in terms of the human, of Homo sapiens sapiens, I'm not thinking of about what we may evolve into. But if that does become necessary, then I think that what we have to bear in mind is that we lay the first diplomacy now for how the future is going to pan out. And, you know, the diplomacy involves having a tight grip on aggression. And those, you know, although that's part of culture, and it's obviously a cultural, that's obviously a cultural plot that's got to be developed. It's also, we can also perhaps eventually breed it into the animal so that the animal is more benign, perhaps, than it is now. But, you know, being benign and being confronted with the universe out there, they're not, they seem to be mutually exclusive in a way. You probably do have to be aggressive to get beyond the solar system to some extent. So, you know, the future is a wonder. We wonder about it. We wonder how it's going to pan out. But all that I would hope is that we take the best tools we can into it. And that's that.
Yeah, excellent, excellent answer to a specific question. But no, I like that.
You think so?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Of course.
Thank you.
Okay, well, we're almost at the end of the interview.
Oh, good.
But I have just a few very specific musical release type questions that you may or may not care to answer. As you may know, I interviewed Darren Crisp earlier in the year, and towards the end of the interview, he got a bit carried away and started talking about all kinds of exciting stuff that was in the vaults, like video film footage of Albert Hall concerts and Rainbow concerts and all kinds of stuff like that. And I think, quite understandably, you've been reluctant to delve too much into the past because you've always wanted to move forward, and I think that's a natural thing that an artist would do. But are there any plans to look at archive material?
Well, there is some archive material. I don't think there's anything from, maybe some from the Rainbow, but I'm not sure about that. There's definitely me at the Albert Hall on December the 3rd, 1973, with Nick on my knee, you know, and he sings that song of Crosby, Stills and Nash's, Our House. It's a very, very, very fine house with two cats in the yard. And Paige comes on, you know, Jimmy appears at one stage, which is very good. But it's, the quality is, it's taken with one camera. And it fell over at one stage. It was left. It was, you know, somebody just switched it on.
And then,
So that's the quality of it. But, you know, Nick has said to me for ages, he said, can I have that piece of film?
Mm.
And I just said, no. Sorry.
I suppose it comes down to whether you, it's actually worth even trying to polish something like that up and whether it would be fiscally worth it as well as, you know.
No, it's not worth polishing. It's not worth polishing it up.
Yeah.
I mean, there's only a certain amount you could polish it up anyway. You can do that. But it can be put out as it is.
Yeah.
But I don't think it should be the next release. You know.
Maybe
it's going too deep.
An Easter egg on a disc at some point or something like that, you know.
Yeah. Well, no, it's actually quite long.
Is it?
It's the whole gig.
Oh, right. Okay.
It's the whole gig.
Yeah.
On one camera. And it's just situated below my knee somewhere.
Yeah. No, that's... Yeah. My interest is sufficiently piqued. Yeah. I mean, the other obvious thing is, what about the odd tracks here and there that have never made it out on CD? Like, Goodbye Ladybird. I played my vinyl
of that.
And it's brilliant. And I'd really like to have a cleaned-up version of it. And you had other songs. Just a Feeling was one that you played live for a while.
Yeah.
Really catchy. And it never came out.
Yeah, it didn't come out because it was my Stonehenge song.
Yeah.
And I kind of, you know, I retired from Stonehenge when it became pretty impossible.
Mm. No, I remember that period very well.
Yeah, you know, when they started circling with helicopters and there was all kinds of. I got ill up there one time. I got ill, and I remember that really well. I had to leave because I got ill, and I realised that, you know, I couldn't have stayed up there. And it was a protest.
Yes.
And as many people have stayed up there as possibly could. And... I stayed for a few days, but then I became ill.
Mm-hmm.
I know why I became ill. I'm not going to tell you. It's not on tape.
The tolling of the distant bell there.
Yeah, yeah.
Just on cue.
The Irish Angelus.
Mm-hmm.
6 o'clock. 6 o'clock and all's well.
Mm.
Or not. I look forward to Angelus. It's one of those things that... It's purely Irish.
Mm.
You know, you don't have anything like that in Britain, really.
Mm.
Not really.
Mm.
But it does actually, you know, a lot of days you just walk through it. Because it's on the radio, it's on the TV.
Yeah, I've heard it in the car, yeah.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
So, you know, at 6 o'clock you stop. That's, you know, the message. Well, the real message is an inward thought. You know, a thought. A thought for the day. And it's a good practice.
Mm.
It's a good thing that it's there. So I enjoy the bells.
Mm.
I enjoy the bells anyway. You know?
Okay, another mundane question for you is... One or two CDs that currently aren't out, and in between every line is one of them, and there's a couple of people being quite sort of frustrated or frustrating in their attempts to find out what's going
on. Both, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in between every line could be done tomorrow, but the only problem is the Highway Blues doesn't fit onto a CD, onto the CD version. It was a double album.
I thought it was Hangman that you... took off.
Oh yeah,
it?
Hangman.
Yeah.
Yeah, Hangman, sorry. Yeah, Hangman doesn't fit onto the onto a CD, onto one CD. I want to put it on one CD.
Yeah.
And it is possible, but it's not been that high on the priority list. And I must look into it again because it's just a matter actually of me getting into a mastering studio. Because if I was to be able to get into a mastering studio I'd be able to put those tracks, probably I'd be able to put those tracks, marry them up, and probably digitally remaster it and put it onto a record. At the moment, what's stopping me is physical. It's nothing to do with money.
Okay.
Or, you know, or taste, or choice, or any of that. It's purely physical. There's physical barriers.
Yeah.
You know, if I could have a mastering studio now, please, concentrate, really. You know, and I'd go in there for a couple of hours. Well, it'd take more than a couple of hours to digitally remaster it, to be honest. But, you know, but at the end of the process, if I was to be able to go in there for a couple of hours, I mean, I can remaster it here. But getting all of the tracks to work and getting them all onto one CD is a problem. It's a physical problem. I don't want it to be two CDs.
Right.
I want it to be one CD. And I don't want to leave Hangman off it.
Right, I understand. So it really isn't just a simple case of, you know, running off.
No.
A quick master and quickly duplicating it and quickly getting out of there. It's nowhere near that simple.
It's nowhere near that simple, no.
Yeah.
I don't want to leave Hangman off it. I can't afford to leave Hangman off it. Hangman is part of it for me.
It's
an integral part of it. It's an important part of it. So it's got to go out like that, but preferably it has to go on one CD. Because, in other words, because two CDs is then you take it back to its original thing, and it's, you know, although that was quite successful, it's not what I want anymore. It's not what the world wants anymore. And it splits it up in a way that I no longer want anymore. Anyway, end of subject.
Okay, no, that's good. Okay, another one that we've talked about off mic a little bit, which is possibility of downloaded music, but particularly what people have been asking about is downloads of old gig recordings and that kind of stuff. I think there's a dedicated but relatively small, perhaps, potential market for that. And I don't know whether the downloading is the way of making that work.
I would love to think that it was. There's some of the Barras gigs that I would love to have available, you know, on the internet. And I've thought, of course, of putting a demo track from the DVD up there, just to like advertise it and say, why are you not buying this?
Yeah,
this is a valuable contribution that I've made that nobody seems to know anything about.
It seems to have slid past people's radar somehow.
Yeah,
I don't
absolutely.
Know why.
You know, something that I did with a real heart in it.
Yeah.
Something I did with maximum input.
Yeah.
Maximum concentration. And has been ignored, virtually ignored. And it's a piece, it's the one modern piece of mine, I think, that's... Yeah, I mean, modern in the last 5 years, five or 6 years. It's the one modern piece that I'm really satisfied with. You know, I thought that... okay, so it's not going to translate to real high-definition TV. But as far as, you know, 3x4 goes...
Yeah.
It does the job. It does the job of putting Roy across in the way that he is actually presents himself. And, you know, all the tracks are, in some way or another, augmented by various effects.
Oh, yeah, I mean, the visuals. People. It's fantastic.
Visuals.
Yeah.
You know. And it's got left behind. It's been ignored by, you know, most of my people, for instance. You know, so you feel as though you're in a vacuum there. It's, you know, being swallowed. And that all that people want is you know, a repeat of 1969 to 1976. That only.
You do get that with people. People are creatures of habit and, you know what they like what they know. And sometimes, you know, you find yourself, I find myself doing that. And then occasionally you think, well, I really should just try and get outside my comfort zone.
Step out the envelope. New.
Yeah, yeah, completely.
You have to step out the envelope.
All right, last couple of questions then. Is there anything that people listening to this podcast...
Rubbish.
Is there anything they can do to kind of help the Harper cause, if you like? Spread your name around, I don't know. Is there any...
Yeah, just spam everyone. No. I think actually that I've got one oar left, so I'll continue to go around in circles. I think that that's a very difficult question to answer.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
I think people will choose in their own ways how to contribute.
Okay.
I mean, we're pretty hand to mouth, to be honest. You know, we eat what comes in. It comes through the door and, you know, in baguettes and garlic. That's what, send me a garlic salmo.
You shouldn't say that. You know what will happen
now.
Oh,
yeah, I've forgotten that.
Okay, any final messages, Roy?
Spread the word. But what is the word? The word is...
And on that thought-provoking note, Roy Harper, thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. That's been a pleasure.
Cheers.
An interrupted pleasure.
Yes, pleasure interrupters.
Yeah.
Well, that wraps it up for the Roy Harper interview, and I'd like to say once again thank you ever so much, Roy, for taking the time to spend so long with me, so many hours that afternoon. I really enjoyed it, and thank you so much for being so frank and personal about things. Now, I said before I'm going to put that podcast out as an all-in-one MP3 soon. That will be in the next week or two. It won't appear on this podcast feed, so come back to www.stormcock.net in the next fortnight and there'll be a download on the front page. But I don't want to put it out on the feed because it will be very large. What you then do with it is up to you. You can probably burn it to a CD or keep it on your hard drive. Now, some credits. This podcast is issued under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 2.0 UK England and Wales license. This means you can share it with others, but you can't change it, claim you made it, or charge any money for it. The Roy Harper music in this podcast is used by a kind permission of Science Fiction Limited and is not for copying or redistribution. If you want to call in and leave a voicemail, the phone number is 01223 850282. Internationally, that's +44 1223 850282. There's a 90-second limit on those. If you want to help review the podcast and you use iTunes, please go and find the podcast page by doing a search for Roy Harper Podcast and leave some comments if you like. There is a donations button on the stormcock.net website if you've got some spare money and want to help with the hosting fees, etc. But that's by no means essential. Completely up to you. Okay, that's about it for this month. I really hope you enjoyed the third part of the interview. Next month, just to dangle a little bit of an intrigue for you, we have an interview with a musician who played on both HQ and Bullinaming Vase. I think you're going to like it. See you next month.